And good afternoon. Welcome back here on this Tuesday, January 15th, 2019, 14 minutes past the hour. We thank Representative Charles Rangel, legendary representative from New York, for being on in hour number one to talk about the government shutdown and everything going on in the world. Now, a programming note, coming up tomorrow on the show at 12:15, we're going to be joined by the Queen of Helpful Hints, our monthly visit with the legendary Heloise, tomorrow, 12:15 until 1 p.m. And then on Thursday, we're going to be joined by the father of conservative talk radio, a regular guest on this program, Barry Farber, on Thursday, 12:15 to 1 p.m., to balance everything out. Also wanted to let everybody know, if you haven't heard yet, one of my favorite guests on the program over the years, legendary actress, certainly most noted for her work on Broadway, Carol Channing, passed away this morning at the age of 97. Carol was on the program several times over the years, and she had an unforgettable laugh and an unforgettable personality, and we will certainly miss her. And if we can fit it in this week, we're going to play one of those interviews from yesteryear with the legendary Carol Channing, so stay tuned for that. Now, this hour is going to be greatly interesting because I recently read a book that I could not put down. The book, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, The Mysterious Death of What's My Line TV Star and Media Icon, Dorothy Kilgallen. Oh my goodness, the story of this woman is one that is amazing. You are going to want to get a copy of this book. The author of this book is Mark Shaw, and this hour, we're lucky enough that he is going to join us via telephone. Mark, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, I guess it is back there. It's still morning here on the West Coast, but No forecast of snow here, so obviously my moving from the Midwest out here was a wise decision.
Yeah, a little snow on the ground out here in January. Mark, Dorothy Kilgallen, she's been, for a large part, forgotten outside of What's My Line. This was a heavy-duty reporter. Where did your interest in her start?
Well, thanks, both in The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and then the new book, Denial of Justice, which is a read that I wrote for both people who read the best-selling Reporter Who Knew Too Much and did not. You know, all of those books, my books usually come, you know, you're a curious guy, and so you find out something and that leads to something, and then you decide to go after it. And with this situation, like most of your listeners, especially the older generation, they will remember Dorothy, as you said, from What's My Line, which was the popular television show on CBS that was every Sunday night at 10:30, live from New York, and it was a quiz show, kind of an intellectual quiz show. They may remember Dorothy was pretty much the star panelist, but Bennett Cerf was on there and Arlene Francis. The host was John Daly, and so they guess people's occupations, and in fact, because of the success of the books, people now go to YouTube and watch the reruns and all of that. They're terrific shows. So that's all I knew about her, Scott. And then I had always been interested in Melvin Belli, who many people remember was a famous attorney in the late middle and late 20th century, a San Francisco lawyer, bigger than life. I had practiced law with him for a few years here in San Francisco in his office downtown, and so I knew him. And when he died in 1996, I decided to write a biography of him. Mostly I've written biographies with some historical bent to them, and I thought Belli was worthy of a biography. And I started looking into his life. People may remember him as he represented the Rolling Stones and Tammy Faye Baker and Muhammad Ali, and he had some of the biggest verdicts in American history. He was a tort lawyer, a personal injury lawyer, but one of his main clients was Mickey Cohen, who was a gangster down in L.A., and I started to learn about Belli's affection for the mafia, and he went to Las Vegas a lot and all of that, Scott. And so while working on that book, I was talking to a friend of his down in San Diego, and the guy said, well, you know, he knew Dorothy Kilgallen. And I said, you know, he was on What's My Line, and this guy kind of, you know, gave me the hard time. He said, no, you don't know anything about her. Mark. She was a reporter for the New York Journal American in the 1950s and 60s, syndicated to 200 newspapers across the country. She had a radio program listened to people by a million people a day. She had What's My Line? And then she was a crack investigative reporter who covered many of the main trials of the 20th century. Dr. Sam Shepard, that many of your people remember because it happened right there in Ohio, that became the film The Fugitive and the television series. She was at the Lindbergh baby kidnapping case, and Mark, she investigated the JFK assassination, and she was at the Jack Ruby trial. And I said, is that right? He said, yeah, no, it's interesting, too. You know, when she died, Belli said to me, they've killed Dorothy. Now they'll go after Jack Ruby. They've killed Dorothy. Now they'll go after Jack Ruby. And I couldn't get that quote out of my mind. I wrote the Belli book, and I wrote another book about the JFK assassination called The Poison Patriarch, about Joe Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy. But I could never get that quote out of my mind, Scott, and that's what led to both The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and now Denial of Justice.
Now, Dorothy, as you said, covered all these high-profile cases, obviously ahead of her time for women of that era. Why did the JFK murder hit her so hard? Because to this day, a lot of people still believe it was Lee Harvey Oswald, lone gunman.
Yeah. Well, through The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and Denial of Justice, I'm going to say to people out there, all of that about Oswald alone makes no sense whatsoever. And, you know, I've been fortunate. Dorothy, for some reason, I believe, kind of chose me to tell her story. I become her voice, and I was able to secure all of this historical material about the JFK assassination. But Dorothy would have never gotten involved in it, perhaps, if she had not been, Scott, a personal friend of JFK's. I was able to uncover the fact that they were friends when he was a senator. He used to come to her lavish townhouse in New York City. I mean, Dorothy was a huge media icon. The New York Post called her the most powerful female voice in America, and Ernest Hemingway said she was the greatest female writer in the world. She was a big deal. And so JFK too came to her townhouse. They played charades there. She would see him at watering holes in New York City. But the biggest thing that happened was that at one point she took her young son Kerry to the White House, and Pierre Salinger set up a tour. And JFK dropped by in the library, and he was so kind to Kerry. He made a fuss over letters he had brought from his third grade class. He gave him a PT-109 pin. He was just so nice to Kerry, and that meant so much to Dorothy. And in fact, people can go to the DorothyKilgallenStory.org, and they can see photographs of Dorothy and Kerry. They're in the books too, but you can kind of see the wonderful affection that she had for Kerry. So that meant a lot to her. And when JFK died then, and I'm going to probably summarize the quote, but in the book I wrote that she, after JFK died, she wrote, the image I have is a tall man stooping over a little boy and looking at the letters he brought from the third grade class. This is the man who was assassinated in Dallas. And that triggered, Scott, as you know, an 18-month investigation in the JFK assassination, and I believe it is the most credible investigation in history.
Tell us about Dorothy's investigation.
Yeah, well, you know, how many people, I've heard from people around the world, you know, who have gained great respect for Dorothy and have said, boy, we wish we had reporters like Dorothy today. She was all about the truth. She was all about integrity. She was all about going to primary sources. There weren't any of these anonymous sources that we find today with all this crazy news we get. She went to the sources, and she had the best sources with her fame. There's a great photograph on the DorothyKilgallenStory.org. She's standing in the courtroom at the Dr. Sam Shepard case, and maybe you saw this in the book too, Scott. All the other reporters are gathered around Dorothy. So she had that reputation, and that's what led her to working on the JFK assassination. She headed right for Dallas. When Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald, that was just too much for her. She couldn't believe that that happened, and there had to be something wrong. So she headed to Dallas. We have photographs of her at the Jack Ruby trial. She sat right in the front row. She started to uncover material about the fact that, you know, when the police were first called, they weren't sent to the book depository building, but to the overpass. you know, she interviewed all these people and everything, and then she sat right there in the front row at the Ruby trial. Although she had written her first column of many about the JFK assassination, the first one was titled "The Oswald File Must Not Close," and she didn't believe this Oswald theory being shouted out by J. Edgar Hoover, and so she was starting to look into that. But when she got to the Ruby trial, and this is the this is the importance of this new book, Denial of Justice, that came out in November. The fact that sitting in the front row, she listened to this damaging testimony, eyewitness testimony against Ruby. And I think people out there who are familiar with the assassination will be shocked as I was when a reader provided me with a copy of the 2,000-page Jack Ruby trial transcripts. And we've embedded many of the excerpts in the new book, Denial of Justice. They're also up on my website, markshawbooks.com. People can read them. But just to summarize, basically what they say from the testimony, actually Jack Ruby watched the assassination from a window at the Dallas Morning News, which faced Daley Plaza. He watched it while it was happening. That's a real shocking statement, as you can imagine. It comes from an eyewitness at the Dallas Morning News. There's testimony in there that Jack Ruby said he had played like a reporter to get into the basement to shoot Oswald, that friends from the Dallas Police Department had helped him do that. And there's the crushing blow to any semblance of Oswald alone when he says, during a phone conversation overheard by a parking lot attendant, "I will be there when Oswald is transferred." So what did this show? It showed that there was a plot to kill the president, and Dorothy knew all that. She was like me. I don't use the C word, the conspiracy word, because that lumps everything together. It all proved that there was a plot to kill the president, that Ruby knew that Oswald was involved in the assassination. I also prove in the new book that Melvin Belli, Ruby's lawyer, knew that the assassination was going to take place. So this just destroys any of this Oswald alone material. But what happened is Dorothy began to write all these columns, and they were very caustic columns, as you may have read, Scott, just blasting the Oswald alone theory, blasting J. Edgar Hoover, all of this cover-up that was happening. And unfortunately, of course, as you know, Dorothy put a target on her back. And that led, unfortunately, as I say, to her death about 2 years later in 1965.
You know, Mark, what's interesting to me about this is she's a high-profile person, without question at that time. But there were other people who did question the lone gunman theory, who did not end up dead. Why Dorothy?
Well, boy, you're so perceptive with your questions, and I appreciate it. Well, that's a good question. She had the high profile, and so she had, you know, the access to all of that inside information. And we know also that at the trial, she's the only reporter to have to interview Jack Ruby twice. She also had a confidant at the Warren Commission who gave her Ruby's testimony before the Warren Commission before it was supposed to be released. So she had all this inside information that nobody else had or nobody else picked up upon. For instance, this testimony I'm talking about that people can read in the book and also at my website, you're just going to be shocked with it. But I had somebody recently who went to a university in Dallas and looked to see what was in the newspapers at the time about this testimony. There was nothing in there. They were all brainwashed by J. Edgar Hoover, who was shouting Oswald alone, and we know from some new documents released by the government last year, was saying right away, "We must show the American people it's Oswald and Oswald alone." Well, Dorothy didn't believe that. And her access to the Jack Ruby trial transcripts permitted me in the new book to really show why she had such a target on her back. She was writing a book for Random House. She was going to include that testimony in there. She was going to include all of the other information that she knew about the JFK assassination that didn't make sense. And those people who were threatened with a cover-up, including, I believe, J. Edgar Hoover and also a mafioso that she had connected to Oswald and Ruby, they couldn't let her write that book. So she was far more important than anybody else out there who was looking the other way from the Oswald alone theory, and that's what cost her her life.
An important point of all this is not only was she at the Jack Ruby trial, but that she had interviewed Jack Ruby.
Yeah,
what,
sure is.
What is the most important part of that?
Well, I pride myself, you know, this is what, 26 or 27 books now, and I pride myself on primary sources. I think I'm probably a lot like you, Scott, from what I was able to learn. You don't like to speculate about things. You want to hear it from the people who were there, the eyewitness testimony and that kind of thing, and accounts. And so I was able to, at the DorothyKilgallenStory.org, and it's mentioned in the book as well, there's an interview with Joe Tannehill, who was the co-counsel with Jack Ruby, with Melvin Belli for Jack Ruby. And there's a videotaped interview with him on the website and also mentioned in the book, where he talks about how this came to be, that Ruby had heard about Dorothy and looked up to her because of her acclaim on What's My Line and the newspaper columns and all of that. One way or another, she was able to orchestrate two interviews with him, and Tannehill talks about it. In fact, I have all these new images in the new book of Dorothy and her with famous people and where she is, but there's one of the courtroom in Dallas, and you can see right where Tannehill says she talked to Ruby. Now, we don't know exactly what Ruby told her, but Dorothy wrote a column after that really saying she now had more information about what really had happened. And she headed for New Orleans right after that, where Carlos Marcello, a New Orleans mafioso, was the king. And he was the guy that I think most people with any common sense believe had the greatest motive to have killed JFK. He did so because Bobby Kennedy was harassing him, deported him out of the country, indicted him for racketeering and all of that. And so Marcello had his back to the wall, and he had to go ahead and get rid of JFK so Bobby Kennedy would be powerless. He knew that if he killed Bobby, JFK would come after him with everything the government had. But Dorothy had figured this all out. You go ahead and you kill JFK so Bobby Kennedy is powerless. And exactly what happened is what Marcello wanted to happen. They left him alone then. So she's got all this information nobody else has. And then unfortunately, Scott, she couldn't keep it to herself. As November of 1965 comes along, she planned a second trip. I'm going to crack the case wide open. She told her hairdresser, Charles Simpson, and the interview is up on the website, if the wrong people knew what I know about the JFK assassination would cost me my life. She tells the other hairdresser, I'm afraid for my life and my family. I'm buying a gun. I'm changing my will. And she was shouting to everybody exactly what she was doing. And Dorothy, although many would think she was invincible because, you know, she was such a big star, she took too many chances, and unfortunately, it cost her life.
Well, this is the peculiar thing, Mark. Dorothy Kilgallen, obviously very smart, very high profile, obtaining these interviews with Jack Ruby, knew the Kennedys, and this is 1963, November of 1963, Kennedy is killed. And this is a two-year period. This is 24 months. Now, why would Dorothy do that? She's obviously aware that she is in trouble. She's aware that this is problematic. Why go, a smart woman that she had to be, and talk to hairdressers and people like that? Well, why do it?
Well, again, you have to look at the character that Dorothy had. She knew the truth here, and she was all about the truth, and she was going to print the truth. And I think she really did feel like she was invincible. As we get to November of 1965, nobody could hurt her. Nobody could cause her any problems. And so, unfortunately, she was so excited. But she said it was the case of a lifetime, and it really was for her. You can imagine how big it was. She had gotten a reputation for covering all these big trials, and now she was going to have the case of a lifetime. And so, I think she was just careless. I think she didn't. She wasn't careful with regard to the people that she told about this. One of them is a newspaper man who is a main suspect in her death that lives not too far away from where you are. He lives in Columbus. Ron Pataki is his name. I name him in the book. I believe he had something to do with Dorothy's death. They had a love affair right before she died. She was sharing her JFK assassination information with him. And I think, unfortunately, he was a Judas who gave that information to the wrong people and was instrumental in her death. And so she just trusted the wrong people, and that's what ended up with this mysterious death that she had on November 8th, 1965.
Before we get to her death, one thing that interests me is that, obviously, J. Edgar Hoover had been in power for quite a while at the FBI.
Yes.
And he was very famous for taping and having files on people to stop them from doing what he didn't want them to do. Now, Dorothy is certainly high profile. She is with the president. She is investigating the case. She's at the trial. She's interviewing Jack Ruby, the only person to do so twice.
Right.
Is J. Edgar Hoover compiling a file on her to pressure her not to do this?
Well, people may wonder, you know, why is this important anymore? You know, JFK died 50-some years ago. Dorothy died 50-some years ago. But this is history, and we need to learn from history. We need to learn about these things and get the truth out there. You know, yes, Hoover had, basically, we have documents in both the books, Reporter Who Knew Too Much and Denial of Justice, where they had you know, looked at Dorothy for a long time. They had watched her actions for a long time. At some particular point, they even put a snitch into a social group that she had at one of the taverns to try to find out what she was doing, because these columns that she had in the New York Journal American, they were caustic at times. They had information in them about criminal trials. There were all this material in there, and so we know that she was under surveillance, and she admitted that, and we have exclusive interviews about that. We know at one particular point after she interviewed Ruby, after she got the material from the Warren Commission, Jack Ruby's trial testimony, there's a new document in there that I found at the National Archives where J. Edgar Hoover writes a letter to the Warren Commission because they're trying to find out what her source is for getting that material, this explosive testimony before the Warren Commission, before it's supposed to be released. And in there it talks about him sending... Hoover does two burly, you know, large, big guys, FBI agents to her townhouse, and here's little Dorothy, and they interrogate her, where did you get this source? Where did you get this material? What's your source? And she says to them, I would rather die than reveal my source. That's the kind of woman she was. And that's the kind of woman, if you are J. Edgar Hoover or Carlos Marcello or anybody connected to the JFK assassination, the implementation of it or the cover of it, you're going to be scared to death of her. And I think, you know, we have to try to understand in the context of what was happening. I mean, Dorothy was a college dropout, for heaven's sakes, who rose to fame. And now she's one of the biggest celebrities in the country. And those people obviously are going to be afraid of what she's going to write in that book for Random House.
As you said, Dorothy is found dead in November of 1965. And again, before we get that to that point, one more question I have. 1965, the president is dead a little over 2 years. Lyndon Johnson is president. Bobby right. Kennedy is still around at that point. Steve Guerin, who later becomes a big part of this JFK issue, I think people recognize his name as trying to bring a case against Clay Shaw. He's around at this point. How does Dorothy become the central figure? These people don't end up dead, at least to our knowledge, that early.
Well, as you know, I'm a former criminal defense lawyer and a legal analyst for some of the major trials in recent memory, and so I look at motive. And you know, Marcello, the motive to kill JFK so Bobby's powerless. J. Edgar Hoover's motive to cover it up, because if it's a nut like Oswald and that's all it was, then the FBI is not responsible. Lyndon Johnson certainly had motive. For heaven's sakes, he became president of the United States. But you look at all these other situations, and I think Dorothy looked at them too at that time, and I'm just, you know, speaking for her because of all the information and investigation I've done. She looked at this differently. She could figure out the fact that the greatest motive here had to be to get rid of JFK so that Bobby was powerless. And so she ends up focusing on Ruby instead of Oswald. Oswald is a red herring. He's a dead end. She knows that. So many years here of all these books about Oswald's participation and the lone gunman and everything in the JFK assassination, it's just wasted effort, because there's so many questions about everything that happened with him. In fact, if you look at all of the books about the JFK assassination, unfortunately, by all these so-called experts, Dorothy's not even mentioned. They missed all this. I almost missed all this. But Dorothy looked at motive, and so she could figure out exactly what the most important thing was. Not Oswald, focus on Ruby and Ruby's actions. And she, when she read that testimony in the trial, and she interviewed him, and all of that, there's no question in my mind that it's the most credible investigation in history, because Dorothy was there. All of these so-called experts, even people like me that wrote about it, we weren't there, but Dorothy Kilgallen was there. We've got her at a news conference with Melvin Belli. We've got a picture of her in the courtroom. Joe Tannehill talks about her being there. She was the real thing, that's for sure.
On November 8, 1965, Dorothy Kilgallen was found dead on the third floor of her five-story Manhattan townhouse. Her death was determined to have been caused by a fatal combination of alcohol and barbiturates. Take me through that last week of Dorothy's life up to her death.
Well, I wish other interviewers were as perceptive as you are and as prepared. I have to say thank you, Scott, for this. What do we know happened? So she goes back to New York after being in Dallas, and she went to New Orleans, and she told her hairdresser who had gone with her, you fly back to New York, don't tell anybody what we did here, don't ask any more questions, and then she's a blabbermouth, and she tells everybody in New York, including this Ron Pataki, one of the main suspects in her death, again based on motive, what she's going to do. And we know that she, on November 7th, of 1965, she ends up going to What's My Line, live show, remember. Her hairdresser, Mark Sinclair, describes in the videotaped interviews on the DorothyKilgallenStory.org, he got her ready, put some flowers in her hair, helped her pick out a dress, put on her makeup and her false eyelashes, and get her going. If people remember, I mean, she was a fashion plate. She wore these beautiful outfits and was always dressed immaculately and everything. So she goes to What's My Line. He notices she's wearing a different dress than he actually thought she was going to, and that comes into play later. She does the show. She goes to P.J. Clark's, which is a tavern on 3rd Avenue that I've been to and sat right next to the table where Dorothy did. She's with some friends. She has a drink or two. She ends up going to the Regency Hotel, which is about a few, not too far away from the tavern, but about 6 blocks from where she lives. She meets what we knew at the time was a mystery man. We have an eyewitness, a contestant from What's My Line, who happened to go to the after-show party there, who saw her with the mystery man. We now know that that was Ron Pataki, the journalist from nearby Columbus, where you live. And she's with him for a time. She has some drinks there, vodka and tonic, and then she ends up going to her townhouse. We don't know exactly how she got there. We've now proven in the new book that she was accompanied by a person when she went there. We believe that was Pataki. And one way or another, then, these barbiturates were somehow or another immersed in a drink that she drank before she went to bed. Dorothy then was found the next morning, and her hairdresser, Mark Sinclair, describes very vividly and very chillingly in his interview on the DorothyKilgallenStory.org and in both books, how he went into the third floor. He was going to help her with her getting ready for a meeting she had at her young son's school. He thought she would be in her dressing room or somewhere else, but he went into a bedroom she never slept in, found her in a bed she didn't sleep in, wearing her false eyelashes, her makeup, a hairpiece she never wore to bed, wearing pajamas she never wore, wearing an outfit she never wore to bed. There was a book on her lap. Her reading glasses weren't around, and so it was a very disturbing situation for him. We now know in Denial of Justice, which is the follow-up book to Reporter Who Knew Too Much, that the butler, James Clement, actually found her in the bathroom first, and then during the time between when that happened and when Mark Sinclair came, the body was moved, we believe by her husband, to the bedroom. The police then come later in the afternoon. There's a few hours between when that happens. We now know from Kilgallen's butler's daughter that the FBI agents swarmed the townhouse, confiscated her JFK assassination file, which has never been found. And finally then, you know, the Benicle Examiner is called. He's called from Brooklyn, not from Manhattan. He then takes a quick look at an empty Seconal bottle, which is on a nightstand by the bed. There's nothing in it. He decides quickly she must have died of an overdose of drugs. There is no investigation of Dorothy's death. The official cause is barbiturates combined with alcohol. And basically, Dorothy Kilgallen is erased from the face of the earth, never able to finish her book, kind of disappears from history for 50 years until I was, in some ways, actually able to bring her back to life.
This is an interesting point. Now, her father, Dorothy was 52, by the way, when she is when she dies. Her father is still alive at this point, 77 years old. He's a newspaper reporter. Now, he says at some point that she possibly could have died of a heart attack. Now, that's ruled out at some point. But what's his motive for that?
Well, there was all sorts of confusion about the situation. The police didn't come, and so the you obviously got a staged death scene. I mean, it doesn't take anybody with any common sense, a police officer, to take a look at that. I proved in an autopsy review that the autopsy was wrong. There wasn't one barbiturate in her system. There were three barbiturates, Seconal, Tylenol, and phenobarbital, and obviously that rules out suicide and any accidental death. But there's all sorts of confusion about exactly when she died and what she died of and all this other kind of stuff. And what's unfortunate, Scott, is, yes, her father gave some ludicrous, idea that she'd had a heart attack, which made no sense. But worse than that, I think we all hope then when something happens to us, and it's in the news, let's say, and everybody finds out about it, we hope that if it's something that doesn't sound like us, something that we would do, we hope that they will speak up and speak for us and say, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Well, in Dorothy's case, not her father, not her mother, not her sister, no one at What's My Line, none of her Journal American colleagues, nobody stood up for Dorothy Kilgallen and said, wait a minute, there's no evidence of her having a drug problem or anything. There's no evidence of her being an alcoholic. Nobody stood up for Dorothy and said, that's wrong. And for a long time, and probably you're thinking the same thing, why? Why didn't they do that? And I've heard from readers all around the world, Sweden, Australia, Canada, everywhere, why? Why didn't they stand up for it? Well, here's what I believe happened, and it's both in The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and now Denial of Justice. They all believe that Dorothy, they all knew that Dorothy was working on the JFK assassination. So they say to themselves, look, if the same people that killed JFK killed Dorothy Kilgallen, I'm not about to come forward and say anything. They were all scared to death. In fact, I will tell you, the two hairdressers that I just talked about, the interviews with them are in 1999 and 2000. And the reason that they gave to the person who interviewed him was they were scared all that time that somebody would come after them. So that's the valid reason as to why nobody came forward. And unfortunately, nobody really has stood up for Dorothy. I'm pleased that I've been able to do so because she was denied the justice that she should have gotten in back in 1965, and I've been on a crusade to get that justice for her.
Mark, the thing that most puzzles me, November 8th, 1965 happens. Now, as we have said, Dorothy Kilgallen at that point is, if not the most popular, one of the most popular people on television. Now, people know who have been reading her column, her friends know, that she's been investigating the JFK assassination. Her death was certainly widely reported in newspapers. She was still on What's My Line at that time. The next week, Kitty Carlisle sits in her chair and says nobody can replace Dorothy Kilgallen.
Right.
The people who attended her funeral, Ed Sullivan, Betty White, Joan Crawford, Kitty Carlisle, big stars of the time. I understand where, because the president obviously was assassinated, and a lot of people believe that was not Lee Harvey Oswald, but her death is not covered up. Just the idea that she was murdered is covered up. How come all the people who had read her columns, not the celebrities, because they would have been high profile, and yeah, they might have been fearful that they might have the same fate happen to them. But nobody in the country at that time says, boy, that's odd.
No, they didn't. And, you know, the both books, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and Denial of Justice, are set up as true crime murder mysteries. That's what's enticed a lot of people to read them and touch people's emotions with regard to what Dorothy was all about. So we've got a lot of suspects. Frank Sinatra was one of them. Her husband was one of them. They were estranged. Ron Pataki certainly was one, the journalist I mentioned. Marcello, Hoover. You've got all of these enemies out there of hers that circled Dorothy for the last few days of her life, that's for sure. And yet, yes, you know, you have to wonder. Unfortunately, and I'm afraid that happens today too, Scott, we want to think the worst about people. We don't, you know, it's just unfortunate when we hear something, we automatically, you know, want to believe the worst about it. It used to drive me crazy when I was representing high-profile people. I handled almost all the time murder cases at the end of the time when I practiced. And it would drive me crazy that on the front page of a paper, there would be the headline, X murdered blank. And then we'd find out a few weeks later that there wasn't any evidence with regard to that, but that wouldn't make any difference because it was on the front page of the paper, and the rest of the news would be on page 9 when it came out. That was all that was forgotten. It was the same thing with Dorothy. The moment that in the newspaper they talk about drugs, they talk about an overdose of barbiturates, you know, it's, oh my gosh, how could she have possibly... You know, she's just like a lot of other celebrities. She's a woman. You know, back then women were looked at worse than they are today, which is just disastrous. It's ridiculous. But in those days, women weren't even supposed to be in the back seat of a car. They were supposed to be in the car behind. So she's a woman. She's a celebrity. She's a journalist, and now she's a druggie. And so that's what they believed. And it's just really unfortunate because she was. In no way involved in any of that, but one of the most remarkable women in history.
That goes without saying, I think. So the big question is, what did happen to JFK, and what did happen to Dorothy Kilgallen?
Well, yes, and I think, as I say, I believe, and I'm trying to be humble about this, but it's hard to do. I think I've exposed the most important JFK assassination documents in history, the Jack Ruby trial transcripts. People, in fact, if they want to, they can go to YouTube. I gave a presentation at the prestigious Commonwealth Club of San Francisco in December, and the videotape of that presentation is up there, and it really sets from start to finish everything that I believe Dorothy had uncovered about the JFK assassination. I think she had figured it out. She is on the job. She's thorough in what she does. She's a woman of the truth. She had the best sources. I mean... It's hard for anybody, I think, to dispute what Dorothy Kilgallen came up with, and I hope that you know, young people especially who are still wonder about what happened back then because it's history, I hope they'll read the books. They can get them at the library. I don't care if they buy them. They can get the library. They can look at the YouTube interviews I've done and listen to interviews like this, which I appreciate, and hopefully they can stop and think. That's what my books are always about, stop and think and make up your own mind, but... Dorothy Kilgallen, we're fortunate that we have her because she was an eyewitness to history.
So the killer of JFK, to our best guess, is probably, who would you say?
Oh, no question, is Carlos Marcello. If you look at from start to finish with what Dorothy found out, he was a mafioso in New Orleans, and as I say, you may remember in the 1960 election, Joe Kennedy had to go to the mafia to help them win that election because they were going to lose Illinois. He promised those mobsters they'd be left alone if JFK won. Bobby Kennedy became attorney general and went after those guys, especially Marcello. And as November of 1963 came along, he had no choice. He had to get rid of Bobby Kennedy. But he killed Jack Kennedy so Bobby would be powerless. Dorothy had figured all of that out. And I will tell you that in the book, in both books, JFK Jr., RFK Jr., Bobby Kennedy Jr., relates the fact that his father believed it was the mafia who killed JFK and that it was Marcello. And you're going to read excerpts from Bobby Kennedy himself who talks about that. So that confirms everything that Dorothy had investigated.
Who killed Dorothy?
Well, I don't think there's any question, in my mind at least, and again, it's a true crime murder mystery. I want people to make up their own mind. But You can look at the suspects, and I think Head and Shoulders among them is J. Edgar Hoover, who had the most to gain by her dying because she couldn't print that book and show his cover-up, which would have led to a grand jury investigation. Marcello, for sure. But again, they had to have somebody on the inside of Dorothy's inner circle, and that's where Pataki comes from. And people can read my interviews with him in the books. They can make up their own mind as to his involvement. He's denied it, of course. But I have no idea that he was the one who was on the inside and probably set up Dorothy for the kill.
You know, Mark, the question that I had after I read the book, I mean, certainly I think people leave thinking that the JFK assassination, there's a little more to that, and the Dorothy Kilgallen death, there's much more to that. But after the JFK assassination is done by the mafia, if we are to believe that, Dorothy's collecting all this information. She's a high-profile person. Now, the government or whoever does kill her doesn't really know what's going to happen afterward. And my thought of covering the JFK assassination for so many years, talking to so many people, is that one of the reasons they did not kill, a lot of low-level people turned up missing, but the high-profile people, I mean, Jack Ruby's still alive when Dorothy Kilgallen is killed. He's in prison, but he's alive. Was that if you killed a high-profile person, that would be very problematic because you don't know how the public's going to take it, and you don't know if their high-profile friends are going to go along with it. In this case, looks like they did. But why not just take her papers? Why kill her?
Well, I think you have to understand that she was a threat. She was such a threat, Dorothy was, to... And I believe, again, I'm going to stay with Dorothy's theory. I'm sure you've interviewed a lot of people, and they can give their ideas and everything, but Dorothy was there. She's the most credible source that we have for what happened. And I really think that, you know, it's so important to understand that they knew she had all of the goods. She had it all, as one of her hairdressers say. She was at the Ruby trial. She had his Warren Commission testimony. She had all the material from the sources. And that first trip to New Orleans where she... You know, you can go ahead and generalize if you want to and say it was the mafia, but it wasn't the mafia. It was a mafioso, Marcello. It was his. He had to kill JFK. Have JFK killed so Bobby would be powerless. Well, it's the same thing with Dorothy. When you look at all of the suspects that are involved, that you know she could not live. She couldn't write that book. She couldn't promote that book. She couldn't put excerpts in the Journal American, that would have led to the demise of both Hoover and Marcello, and that's why she had to be killed. They had to silence her, which is the most extreme form of censorship. You know, they killed her. They silenced her. And you're going to read a couple poems that Ron Pataki wrote about, you know, silencing her and even describes in some ways how she was killed through the barbiturates and a drink. I mean, all of these people decided that Dorothy Kilgallen could not live one more day beyond November 8th, 1965.
That being said, we all know what has happened in the past 60 years. Movies were made about Steve Guerin, JFK. He lived on. There was a lot of stuff there. People on the Warren Commission live. There's movies, documentaries, all kinds of stuff. Why nothing on Dorothy? Probably the most high profile of all those people. Why did it never come to the?
Well, I think you mean Jim Garrison, but that's
Jim
that's
Garrison.
Okay.
Yes, excuse me.
Had JFK the movie because Dorothy goes in the opposite direction. Let's say that something happened there in Marion, and you know, you go ahead and you report it, and you have somebody on your show that talks about it. And you know, they give their opinion, and you know, go ahead and put yourself out a limb and say this sounds like the right thing, you know. Well, there's all these other people out there who somewhere or another get their information from another source, and you know, it doesn't matter what you say, it's not going to change their mind. They have one theory. Well, the theory of all these so-called experts, Bugliosi, Gerald Posner, Stephen King, Bill O'Reilly, all these so-called experts, their theory is Oswald alone. Well, Dorothy is in the opposite direction. She doesn't believe that. And her evidence shows that that's a ludicrous assumption to be made about the JFK assassination. So what's the thing to do? You leave her out of all your books. You don't even pay attention to her. You don't want anybody to know about it. And so it's amazing. I mean, I fell into this by accident. I fell into Jack Ruby trial transcripts by accident. Except I don't believe there's anything really, except the fact that I was supposed to find these things for some reason. And I have, and I've presented them, and now people can make up their own mind. But that's the reason why she was ignored. And it's unfortunate that that happened, but now at least we've got these thousands and thousands of people who have read the books. They're going to make a film out of The Reporter Who Knew Too Much. It's in development in L.A., and hopefully people will hear the other side of the story, which is Dorothy Kilgallen's story.
Is there any, well, Betty White's still around, is there anybody left who has come to Dorothy's defense in all this, who knew her personally?
Well, unfortunately, no. There have been, it just doesn't happen. I know it may sound ludicrous, but it doesn't happen. And it doesn't matter how loud I shout about what Dorothy found out, people are not going to change their mind. And those people, I'll just give you an example. Phyllis McGuire, the singer, is still alive. She was Sam Giancana's, the mobster's girlfriend. And I had a quote from her about the fact that Giancana knew that Marcello was involved in Dorothy's death, that Phyllis knew about this. She lives in Las Vegas. She knew Dorothy. I got in touch with her through telephone and email, and she would never talk to me about this, even though I believe she probably knows the truth about what happened back then. So it's just mind-boggling. In my own mind, these people are cowards, that they never came to the front and talked about Dorothy or talked about the JFK assassination for all these years. And we could spend another hour talking about Dorothy's family, her children, her relatives. All of these people still won't talk about Dorothy. They won't come forward and give information about that, so I've had to piece it together and all of that. So unfortunately, I've kind of been a lone voice for Dorothy, and I would welcome any support from anybody, but I'll keep fighting for Dorothy, that's for sure. And as you know, I've got the New York District Attorney's Office to investigate her death last year, and now I'm back at their doorstep working on that again.
Final question, Mark. Is there any chance that this was a woman who was a celebrity, who was under a lot of pressure at that time because of the JFK thing, who accidentally overdosed or committed suicide?
Oh, there's always that possibility. Sure, I can't say with 100% certainty that it didn't happen, but if you read The Reporter Knew Too Much and Denial of Justice, and you go to DorothyKilgallenStory.org, as far as suicide goes, she was Catholic, she was at the top of her career, it's ridiculous. As far as accidental overdose of drugs, there's no evidence whatsoever of her having any problems with that. She was at the top of. I'll tell you. Seal it up this way. Go watch her last show on What's My Line. Go watch that show on November 8, 1965, and you make up your own mind what kind of mentality is in Dorothy. Even Joe Tannehill, the co-counsel for Ruby, talks about seeing her shortly before she died. How sharp she was. Her mind was so sharp. But go watch that show on YouTube, and then you can make up your own mind as to whether there's any possibility of anything other than murder here.
Fascinating. And so much more information in the books. Mark, tell people where they can get your books.
Well, fortunately, they're everywhere. The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and Denial of Justice, the new book, are both at the bookstores. They're in the libraries and, of course, on the internet sites. But if I had my druthers, I'd ask people to go to independent bookstores. We need to keep those alive. And so, people can get in touch with me through markshawbooks.com if you have any comments about what we've discussed. And also, if you have any information about Dorothy Kilgallen and her life and times and her death, that's what led to the second book, all these tips that I got from readers. So, and again, I want to thank you so much, Scott, for permitting me to come on the show and talk about Dorothy. I really appreciate it.
It's fascinating. Mark Shaw, author, has been the guest. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you.
Whew, Dorothy Kilgallen. What a story. We're done for the day. The Pastor Spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker coming up at 5:10 tonight. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Stay tuned. More programming.
Super Bowl Event Games, LLC. Address 141 South Main Street. Telephone number 740-262-60. Facebook Affordable Event